This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of the Ticket City Podcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum of OrangeBloods.com, joined by almost the entire Orange Bloods gang. Anwar is here. Jason is here. Dustin is here. Alex is in Mobile, Alabama, doing... Guys, that's like porn for him. Like, the Senior Bowl is something for him that I don't feel like any event during the entire year does for me. I don't know what else exists that does for me in what we do than what the Senior Bowl does for Alex, who I think it really is erotic for him.
Oh, maybe the NFL draft for you, Ketch, but you don't get to travel for that, you know, but
Reminds me of the Bielema quote after the Texas Bowl. that's probably the way Alex speaks about the Senior Bowl right now.
Absolutely. He looks forward to this. And you're right. He loves the combine, too, because how many times have we had to hear him talk about that place that does the shrimp cocktail?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. St. Elmo's.
He's going to bring that up once we get close to the combine. He's going to be like, oh, I love Indianapolis. Every year I go and get my shrimp cocktail. It is a Dunlap tradition. Guys, let's start with the Brew McCoy thing. It is, as we record this, it's Thursday morning, 9:30 Central Time. Jason, within the hour, has posted an update on Brew McCoy that kind of addresses what's been going on in the last 24 hours or so. It feels impossible at this point to. So it's weird because you may listen to this podcast later. And it may be outdated to some degree. I don't know that we know exactly how this Brew McCoy thing is going to unfold over the course of the next 24 hours on. Jason, we'll just let you bat lead off. Lead us in the discussion of this scenario, because it's been brewing behind the scenes to a certain degree. But it is it's coming to a head, and now it's public knowledge across, you know, most platforms and in both the LA market and the Austin market. This one has a chance to go down in the storybook as one of the more interesting recruitments that we've covered in 20 plus years together.
Yeah, I think it has its own chapter. Whether or not it moves up to chapter one, we'll see. But I think it's definitely in the book for sure. I tell you, the timing is weird. You mentioned there's still very much some moving parts in this. It's a pretty delicate story on what I can say right now. And I know people don't necessarily want to hear that, but I will provide all the backstory when I can, but I just can't say everything right now. But what I can say, this isn't a story that just blew up on Wednesday. Okay. That's when you started seeing all these hints about, oh, good news coming for Texas, and multiple outlets in the Austin market, the UT market, were dropping hints about it being a good day or going to be a big day or something. And frankly, the USC side of things were quiet. Trust me, I have pretty good relationships with several USC reporters just from being in this business for 20 plus years. And those dudes, when I was talking to them late afternoon yesterday, they didn't know much about it. They were calling me, asking me, and they basically were calling bullshit on some of the things that I was hearing. And I'm just to the point that one of them's like, you sure the person you're talking to is really the person you're talking to and not an imposter posing as this person you're talking to? And I'm like, dude, trust me, the information is good. But you know, the story came up Wednesday lunchtime ish or whatever, but this story, it's one that I've been kind of tracking literally going back to the All-American Bowl in early January down in San Antonio. It's kind of been on again, off again, on again, off again. And that's why you haven't heard much of it publicly. But, you know, Brew, before he enrolled at USC, I think it was January 7th, I believe, or when classes started, he kind of had doubts even before he enrolled. Now, people say, well, why did he enroll? Well, the truth is, he signed his letter of intent in December. I know other people have said he didn't. they're wrong. He signed his letter of intent in December, so he was obligated to enroll at USC. He did. He enrolled at USC, but the second he got there, you know, the Kingsbury thing went kind of sideways and went haywire. He literally learned of the Kingsbury thing as he's on his way to the USC campus to start what should have been his USC, or I guess what is still his USC career. But, you know, so it's been kind of on again, off again. He was considering his options, and then USC talked him back in. And now here we are a couple weeks later, 2.5 weeks later, and he is once again exploring his options very seriously, to the point that he did meet with the – and this comes from a source extremely close to McCoy and the whole situation. People can – you know, if you follow my reporting on this, you can probably figure out who it is. But he did meet with the USC staff yesterday – and told him of his, I want to say his intentions to transfer, because that's not what was told to me, but just that that there was a possibility that that's what he wanted to do. And as of last night, I was told, hey, nothing has happened in the way of he's not entered the transfer portal yet. He hasn't, hasn't made a 100% official decision, but the USC coaches have been notified. And I mean, where there's smoke, there is fire in this case. I mean, he is strongly considering his options. I'm supposed to follow up with a source this morning, meaning West Coast morning, so probably closer to lunchtime, Austin time. But I expect we'll have a final answer on this thing, you know, early afternoon at the latest is what I'm hoping for. I think he's going to enter the transfer portal. I do. Now, he can enter the transfer portal. That can go. There's a million different ways that can go. If he does enter the transfer portal, he could enter the transfer portal and try to apply for a quick waiver from the NCAA that would allow him potentially to just pack his bags up if it gets approved and head to Austin. If that's what he wanted to do, he could enter the transfer portal, stay at USC for a semester if he had to, and then transfer. And then he may or may not have to sit out a year, depending on, you know, what happens with this waiver or any petition he does to the NCAA. I tell you, my understanding is the hope with Brew McCoy and those close to him, whatever he decides, if he decides today he wants to transfer, they want a quick resolution. They want to address it with the NCAA, get a quick petition and get an answer. And that, again, this is something that's been going on for a while. So they've had their finger on the pulse of that, if you will. They've had kind of wheels in motion behind the scenes, knowing if this happened, they would need a quick resolution. So it's, you know, for all, I don't know for sure, but it wouldn't shock me if they've already had conversations with people at the NCAA, had legal teams involved, things of that nature, in case it got to the point that it very may well get to later this morning. So it's a touchy situation, man. And you know, I feel like I've had good sourcing on it, but I've also tried to respect my sourcing. You know, they did not want it out there yesterday publicly. And I was told, hey, if he enters the transfer portal, you'll be the first guy we tell. We'll let you deliver the news, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, once other websites started putting out hints, which drives me effing crazy, but they start putting out hints, people start digging and poking around, and you know, one hint turns into two, and then someone else feels pressure. Then they put out another hints on Twitter, on websites, and then USC people start sniffing around. And it just, you know, like I said, hey, you know, there was fuel to the fire with those hints being put out publicly. And then by the end of the night, that fire was burning out of control. And now we're having to address it in a perfect world. And I guess it's just almost impossible in today's day and age, but the family would have gone through this process. I mean, listen, in talking to people close to the family, they're really struggling. This is not, I mean, it's kind of tearing them up inside, I feel like. And I mean, Brew's really struggling with it, as is the entire family. But unfortunately, it got out earlier than they wanted it to. And, you know, it is what it is now. You just can't ignore it at this point.
Okay, fellas, let's talk about it. Like, Jason got the professional reporting what's been going on side of this out of the way. Dustin, you know, you're a recruiting junkie like I am. And, you know, your favorite school, you know, your guilty pleasure, if we will, is Florida State. You've seen a lot of stuff over the years with Florida and the stuff that goes on in the Sunshine State in recruiting. I'm curious, before you have to run off for a couple of minutes and do the Shaka Smart teleconference thing, your thoughts on this, because someone mentioned earlier today, where will this ultimately rank in the history of wild recruitments that orangebloods.com will have covered? And I haven't completely processed it yet, but if it goes the distance in a way that, you know, quite frankly, I think some people think it's going to go in, even though Jason is telling every, you know, just because Jason is saying that this is really tough on the family and nothing is final, that's not going to stop people from reading the tea leaves and trying to ride the momentum wave of what they think is potentially him going to Texas and then figuring out the details later. Just your thoughts on, in your mind, decade plus really being a recruiting Nick in the state of Texas, where would this one rank?
It's got potential.
It does have potential, yes.
It's got some serious potential to be up there with one of those recruiting stories that we tell for a long, long, long time. And, you know, I've followed recruiting closely for a long, long, long time, and I can't recall many situations like this, because there's, you know, there's been times in the past where there's been guys in this type of similar situation. I can recall, I can't remember the guy's name, but there was a four-star top 100 or top 250 receiver that committed and signed with Clemson years ago. And he decided after he signed, he wanted to go to Florida State. And Clemson was basically like, sorry, it's not going to happen. And that guy just kind of was never really heard from again. So yeah, it's got potential to be one of the more, I'm trying to think of the right word for it, but just totally unique and odd recruiting stories that we've seen in a long, long time. And my biggest thing with it is, with the multiple signing days or signing periods, you know, I think that allows prospects to take their time a little bit more. And I understand there's some pressure on these kids to sign and they want to get some things over with and just put it to bed. But I mean, a situation like this with so much coaching change, that's kind of the benefit of being able to wait to February, is you have that option to say, you know what, I'm going to commit, but I'm going to wait because I want to see what happens with the coaching staff. And that's easier said than done. I'm not trying to put myself in the shoes of a 17 or 18 year old kid trying to make this decision, but that, I mean, when I just following this thing, Jason mentioned it, it's, you know, we're down in San Antonio and it's like every day it was Brew McCoy stuff like this or that. It just felt like it was something different. And then even though he committed, it was like, okay, I think this is over with, but I'm not completely sure if it's over with. And here we are again. So my thing is does this eventually become, you know, as Jason reported today and did a great job of, there hasn't been any decision made or anything. But let's say down the road, like, does this become some sort of example for the whole waiver thing, you know, because if you take, you know, Joe
Blow, like a precedent, right?
Right. Like, does this become the precedent for the high school player being able to acquire a waiver because of a coaching change? Because as we know, USC is not the only place where there's been coaching turnover. Hell, Alabama lost basically in its entire coaching staff after all those guys signed, and all of them are top 100 five-star types of prospects. So this sort of thing goes on in multiple places. It's just not independent to this situation, but could this become, you know, the precedent for acquiring a waiver? Because if you start granting waivers to, you know, the Tate Martells of the world or the Justin Fieldses or somebody, you know, let's say a five-star guy signs and a coaching change happens and he wants out and you grant him a waiver, all of a sudden you're starting to knock on the door of the free agency element in college football. And you know, I wonder with the way this recruitment has played out, or this situation, because I'm not even sure if it's a recruitment anymore. Could this eventually become some sort of, you know, case study for the NCAA and its waiver process, and how high school kids can sort of, you know, use their power in certain situations with coaching turnover and things like that to be able to have more options, or to maybe it's an example of, hey, maybe more guys will start waiting to the end. I don't know. I just think it's got a potential to be something that we talk about for a long, long, long time in recruiting, in terms of, you know, goes way beyond just the schools involved in the recruitment, in terms of how this affects how high school kids handle their recruitments and the NCAA looks at those kids as it relates to the waiver process.
Dustin, go do Shaka. People won't even know you're gone, and then you'll be back. And that's almost like an inside thing, because I doubt most people that would be listening to this. They might. He's got to go do a teleconference real quick. So Dustin is going to leave the conversation for a moment and then come back. And had I not said that, nobody probably would have known. Anwar, one of the things that I, you know, if in Orange Bloods, if someone wanted to pay $1 million and have access to our Slack channel just to read the things that we say behind the scenes.
I like that idea. Open it for bidding, by the way.
Exactly. I once had a guy offer me $5,000, and all that I had to do in exchange for the $5,000 was basically keep him in the loop when things happen, like send him a text message or a quick phone call and be like, hey, Brew McCoy kind of a thing, right? And I didn't take it because I felt like there was something ethical about it that felt shady. But I would say a month after I said no, I regretted it.
You give yourself like $5,000 a year or something, dude. Can't be a lifetime deal, right?
Yeah, I couldn't remember who it was that even had lost. I probably would have contacted that guy back and been like, you know what? Yeah, man, I want to go to Hawaii. So give me the $5,000, and yeah, I'll keep.
Well, how many years ago was that catch?
Oh man, it was like a decade. It was so long ago.
You realize now you're gonna have like five people.
No. I'm just letting it be known. I will be an insider for $10,000. So
I'll do it for $8,000.
You're gonna get good recruiting info, but I'm gonna give you the team info, and then I can steal his stuff. And you could save. I'm just telling you, $10,000. Venmo me $10,000, and I promise you, I'll tell you whatever the fuck you want to know.
And everybody, let's just
no F bomb, because then some guy gets mad at that.
Our luck is there's one guy at the IRS listening to this right now. It's like, well, we need to check those accounts now for random $5,000 and $8,000 and $10,000 deposits and where they claimed. This one's fascinating, Anwar, because if people had access to our Slack conversation, by the way, I'm going to take you inside the types of things that we talk about just a little bit behind the curtain at Oz. One of the things that we were talking about yesterday is this idea of whether or not he can play in theory right away. I mean, there's a lot of ways that this thing could go, especially if USC wanted to dig their heels in, or if they felt like Texas had tampered in any way and Texas was the choice. Like, they could make it hard. But one of the things that we were talking about is that I think we all have this sense that the NCAA is at this point in its existence where it just doesn't want to have to pay players. And we're really starting to see this. I think if we were going to call this anything, we would call it the era of concessions, where the NCAA is trying to make this thing as soft and comfortable for these players as they can make it without actually giving them cash. And you wonder if a guy like Brew McCoy finds himself in a situation where he's like, look, man, I signed. They pulled the rug out from underneath my feet. I want my release, and I want to be eligible immediately. You just get the sense that the NCAA wouldn't want this thing going to court. Like, there's just – I think they're afraid of the courtroom, which I think puts us potentially in a position that Dustin was just talking about, where this could end up being a precedent. And it could be one that in the long game, the NCAA maybe will one day regret. But in the short term, I just don't think they want a Brew McCoy problem, or they won't want one. If it's not one now, I think they would view it as, oh, man, really? Can we just keep trucking along without having to go to court for one of these issues? And so what's your gut tell you on this?
Oh, my gut tells me this is just the beginning, Ketch. This is what my gut tells me. But I don't, because it is, there is that point, right? Ketch, right now, I've seen this on Twitter. I don't have it verified, but I've seen it on Twitter, on many people have said that there are over 1,000 football players in the transfer portal right now. Like, just wrap your head around that. If true, that's like how many a freaking team they have guys who are just like, hey, what's out there for me? I mean, it's just going to become the new norm. I remember I said on our podcast, I think it was last week, and I said it on my Yak podcast. I said, you know, guys, you know, people can literally come in here on day one and step on the campus and then put themselves in a transfer portal. Like they could say, all right, coach, you made these promises to me. You said that I'm going to be able to compete for the position as a freshman. Show me. I'm in the transfer portal. Let's see what happens. and it's like, hey, if I'm not one or two on the depth chart, then screw it. I'm out. Like there is going to be, people who use it to their advantage. I mean, the transfer portal is going to be this new thing that we're just going to be covering. It literally is going to be free agency all year long. But I just don't see it changing. I don't see it happening. I mean, because the NCAA, and I know people are going to get pissed, right, Ketch? Anytime you bring up NCAA playing players, what happens? They get a free education, so you guys, they should be happy with that. Okay. So for the few people who are going to say free education, got it. You don't have to post it. I know what you're thinking, right? But there are a certain segment of people who do feel like, you know, players should be paid, that they're earning, they're helping these people make money, and I get the our arguments and counter arguments. I'm not really here to debate that. And the NCAA just does not want to be put in a position. So what they've done essentially is they've given players power, and they've given them players power, and they're not going to take it away. Like that's the last thing they want to do, because now they're going to get dragged in the courtroom again for potentially. So hey, you guys can just go wherever you want. It could be a free for all transfer. We don't care. Just keep playing. And, you know, essentially keep earning us money. And, yeah, it's one of these things that I don't know if the NCAA did it on purpose. And I don't know if it was a purposeful thing to make sure that this happened. But now that it's here, I just don't see a scenario where it ever goes away. I just think that these are guys, Ketch, who are doing it, working the system, like, legit. But we haven't gotten to the people who figured out how to work around the system.
It's so new that they're just working the system now. But eventually there'll be like a game to it all, and they're actually just doing the process the way it's been created. What happens when, you know, all hell breaks loose? It's fascinating to me. There's a part of me. I don't know how I feel about all of this. I just chuckle, though, that the players have gone from no leverage to seemingly, hey, coach, I know I've only been here 30 days, but you told me in recruiting that I was going to get a chance to start as a freshman, and I ain't seen no first-team reps in spring practice yet. So either give me my first-team reps, which you told me I was going to get in recruiting, or I'm putting my name in the transfer portal and, you know, I'll get my 1 year waiver and I'll play somewhere else in the fall. Like,
it's crazy. It's crazy.
It is a level of leverage that is going to spook this shit out of everybody. But if we could stop for a moment and appreciate the irony of it all, I do kind of find it funny. I know it's problematic, but the NCAA has put itself in this position. And I think the school presidents, not the coaches, because the coaches don't even want to give an inch, let alone a yard. But the school universities, I think, have not thought these things through. They haven't thought about like the ramifications of all these things clearly, or there would be more legislation over this. And it will be interesting to see what happens if they try to put the genie back in the bottle to a degree that – in May, or whenever the college coaches get together, and they're going to talk with their athletic directors. They're going to say, these are the things that we think need to be into place. Rule changes need to be made. And you wonder, Jason, if a situation like this with Brew McCoy is one that, well, look, they already did it for Brew. So you can try to change the rules, but it's already been done. Are you now going to tell me no when you did it for this kid? I think what happens this month, between all of these schools and what they immediately, you know, decide that they're willing to allow for, like USC could just say, look, man, we don't want the headache. So,
yeah, man, you go do whatever you want to do. Because, you know, Oklahoma tried to block Austin Kendall from West Virginia. A little bit of pushback on that about how unfair it was, and they gave in pretty quickly. And he's there now and is going to be the quarterback for West Virginia. That,
but Brew would still have to go get some kind of waiver from the NCAA. Even if they say, hey, we're not going to block you, you know, go where the hell you want. Go to UCLA if you want to. But he would still have to get a petition because technically he would be transferring.
I know, but they seem to be giving these waivers.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Halloween night.
Which to me is maybe – I got a lot of issues with the transfer portal. I hate the whole thing. But these waivers, and I think that to me is one of the biggest missteps by the NCAA. I mean, that is opening a whole can of worms. And, you know, if they had been a little more strict with these waivers from the get-go, maybe you wouldn't have so many people, you know, like Brew McCoy thinking they could, you know, make these kind of transfers with little to no repercussions. I don't know, man. They're going to – to me, I feel like they're going to have to tweak the system quite a bit and maybe literally put some very clear bylaws in there. If a head coach leaves – and I know that one's in there, but, you know, now you've got Brew McCoy. Well, his argument can be, hey – Cliff Kingsbury left and they lied to me when I was being recruited. You know, I just think they need to have some very clear guidelines on what can allow for a waiver and what's going to be turned down. And frankly, I think they need to tighten things up a little bit. I think they're being a little bit too lenient with this allowing kids to transfer with no repercussions, no consequences at all. I just, you know, we've said it before. It's the Wild West. It's free agency. I don't like anything about it personally. I mean, and I feel bad for McCoy. Listen, Brew and his family are not without fault in this. And if you talk to them, they'll admit as much. I mean, they made the mistake of basically being too trusting of Cliff Kingsbury and signing in December. If they had to do it all over again, no way in hell they would sign in December. I've been told, hey, they would advise every other recruit in the world, don't sign in December. Don't do what Brew McCoy did. If Brew did not sign in December, none of this is an issue. He's already in Austin. He's been in Austin last Wednesday with all the other early enrollees. They made the mistake. I mean, that's on them. Why they did it, I don't know. They trusted Cliff Kingsbury, trusted what he was selling them. But, you know, he was lied to, but it's kind of their fault for believing the lies. It's a weird deal to me because everybody knew that Kingsbury, that cloud was still hanging around, that he might leave. So, I mean, Kingsbury must have just done a hell of a job looking them in the eye and selling them that, hey, that's not going to happen. And those are erroneous speculation, erroneous reports, because the McCoys believed it. They put their faith in him. They signed, or Brew signed, with USC in December. And that was their biggest mistake. And that's what they're battling against right now. But to me, I just think that's such a slippery slope. And listen, if Brew wants out of there and it's best for his future, you know, regardless of it's Texas or USC or Alabama or Florida, anywhere in between, good. That's what I hope happens for Brew's sake. But to me, that's a slippery slope for the NCAA to, if they do grant that waiver, if he asks for one, you know, they better be ready for a flood of those things to happen, you know, this year, next year, in the coming years, unless they somehow tighten up those rules.
Jason, one of the interesting things about this is that in theory, Texas shouldn't know about any of this, right? I mean, he's a USC football player. So in theory, whatever the hell's going on with Brew McCoy, you know, they got their own stuff to worry about and filling that position and finishing out the rest of this class and the things that we'll talk about later on in this podcast, 2020 recruiting and things like that. Brew McCoy, in theory, should be out of sight, out of mind. To be a fly on the wall of the Texas coaching staff this morning as they, you know, they sit down, they have a staff meeting, and hey, let's talk about that stuff that's being talked about on the internet.
I don't even know if they're really – well, I guess they can talk about it privately. I was about to say publicly they really can't.
They can, yeah.
No, I guess privately they could. But, I mean, listen, I mean, you know, I've been aware of this. I have sources. The Texas coaches obviously have way better sources than me. So if I've been hearing about it since I was down in San Antonio, you damn well know they have. And, you know, I heard about it through other recruits that Brew was telling. So, I mean, just – you know, grapevine talk, or, you know, grapevine talk travels quickly. Yeah, I'm sure they're well aware of what's going on, but it is a fine line. I mean, they can't be talking to the kid. I don't think they can talk to the family. You know, they need to distance themselves as much as possible to avoid any impression of Texas tampering. I mean, like I said, they certainly can't make any public comments, but I'm sure within the football offices, yeah, like you said, they're sitting around the round table discussing, hey, what could possibly go down and how that impacts them and what their next move is if and when Brew McCoy does make it official that he's going to transfer.
If you're the Texas coaches and all you're seeing is Texas riders alluding to something big and potential, and it's really about Brew McCoy, you've got to be thinking that Tom Herman is just wanting to grab like everyone's laptop or phone and just destroy it at some point, because the last thing you want is any impression that this is a Texas generated story that has anything to do with Texas. Like, that's if I'm them at that table, I'm like, God damn it, guys, you guys are killing me right about now.
Yeah. And Anwar, all the hints originated on the Texas side. It wasn't USC. USC dropped Brew's name last night. They were the first USC websites were the first one to openly name Brew McCoy. But yeah, you want to be careful what we say, but you're right, man. I mean, it's, that doesn't look good when all, if these hints are all originating and the kind of general discussion and building the hype is originating out of Austin. I mean, that stuff needs to stay quiet, but I can't unring the bell now.
I mean, you know, you can only be a virgin once.
I've used that line a few times. It's worked a couple times.
Hey, let me ask you this, Jason, before we move on from Brew McCoy, because there are other things to talk about, and he's first half hour of the podcast has been the Brew McCoy special. For me, nothing could ever top Ryan Perilloux. Yeah. I feel like the circumstances of Daryl Scott the fact that you were in Colorado and got shut out.
California twice.
California, yes. Yeah. That, you know, like Daryl Scott has its place secure, I feel like, number two. Like, it would really take a set of dynamics to occur that would one up that, because it's a decade later. We're still talking about a kid that didn't go to Texas and people want to know the inside story. Does this like fall? Because we had this car. Remember, I did the top 10 list a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it's definitely moved up since you made your list.
Yes. And I'm wondering if this puts it like on the medal stand.
I mean, it's up there right now anyways, probably. But if he definitely enters the transfer portal and goes through all this business of trying to get a waiver and all that stuff, I think it's definitely top three. I mean, it's so unique to anything else. I mean, Perilloux, I mean, his was just a basic, you know, he flipped on this, well, I guess technically on signing day. I mean, his wasn't as bizarre as this one. Perilloux was just, it was a different time covering recruiting. I mean, he was like the only guy people wanted to hear about, and you didn't have social media, you didn't have early signing day, you didn't have 50 websites calling these guys. I mean, I think maybe Rivals and one other might have been the only game in town back then. Looking back, that one was crazy, man, and so many things about that one was crazy, because we knew he was lying, but you have to report what he's saying, and this is a young man who answers the phone with me while he's on an official visit. I think it was Mississippi State, and he's eating lunch with the Mississippi State coaches, and he answers the phone and says, oh, I can give you an interview. And I'm like, well, dude, it's cool. I'll call you later, man.
He did. He was okay with doing the interview.
Yeah, like right the coaches.
I think he was inside the home of the head coach at the time.
I don't remember. I just remember they were eating. I remember that. But I'm like, no, dude, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were doing all that. But, you know, that was – but it wasn't as unique as this one. That was just a pure flip. The Daryl Scott one – man, that one was so crazy because there just seemed to be some behind the scenes shenanigans. And like you mentioned, I literally fly out to California. Most listeners probably know this backstory. Anwar may not have heard a lot of it, but you know, it was going to be televised on ESPN, his announcement. I got permission from the ESPN to fly out there and cover his announcement. It was going to be an ESPN zone in Disneyland. I fly out there. I get word like, I don't know, a day or two before signing day when I got there, hey, it's not going to be Texas. It's going to be Colorado. Something weird's happening that shifted this thing. But anyways, I got locked out by the mom. She would not let me go into ESPN zone. And I was shut out. So I literally sat in the parking lots. Basically, it wasn't Twitter, so I don't remember how that – I was on the phone with you, Ketch. I don't remember how I tracked it. You were probably watching on ESPN and keeping me updated. But, yeah, so that one was kind of weird in itself. But this one truly – I mean, I said it last night. I said, man, I've covered recruiting, what, 2 decades now. Every time I think I've seen it all – something new surprises me, but this one is just unlike anything I've ever seen or covered before. So it's definitely on the podium. And I mean, depending on how these next 48, 72 hours go, shit, man, it could make a case for the top spot. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, no.
I don't know, man.
I had to rob a bank to supplant Ryan Perilou, who,
I get it, man. Perilou was, cause that's all we talked about, but it wasn't as just unique as about it was.
Like the trio of Fred Rouse and Marcellus.
Yes, that's true. Yeah,
all
correct.
Of that, the recruiting other kids at the Army Bowl in San Antonio while still telling everybody that he was committed to Texas. I mean, it was nothing can beat Ryan Perilou. Now that means
he might not ever be able to be beaten. I'm not sure. Yeah,
I just don't. It was a different time and place. 2,000 people signed up in 2 months.
That's as I hate covering it, but I sure loved it because that was the best thing we've ever had for business. I think we made more off of Perilou than a coaching change.
That was the thing that pushed us to the number one spot in the network, and we've never looked back. Like it was Ryan Perilou that launched us into kind of a new stratosphere.
Omar, put it in perspective. I mean, there was one time I wrote a Ryan Perilou update. I don't remember what it was. I think it was fairly routine. I think within a couple hours, and Ketch, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we had over 200 new subscribers sign up within a couple hours over one random recruiting update.
Can you do another update and give us some more subs? Like that would be. Can we just see some people holding on?
2,000 new subscribers in 60 days. It was wild. It was wild. There was just a perfect storm of like, Jason's right, man. Ryan Perilou answered the phone on an official visit to Mississippi State at dinner inside the home of the head coach and was like, no, I'll give you an interview. Hold on. Coach don't care.
I was like, no, dude, I declined. For the record, I did decline the interview. Said I'll call him back some other time.
But even like the night before his announcement, Jason was able to get a hold of him, and Perilou was still saying, I'm signing with Texas tomorrow morning. And then he signed with LSU, and everybody knew it. And there was there was this weird thing going on where we were trying to tell people the truth. And it was like, are you calling this kid a liar?
Kinda.
And it was like, well, we don't want to like ever call anybody a liar, but he ain't telling the truth.
It's a gray area.
the only thing I can really ever think of that's similar to this, and I've got to get him on a podcast. I've got to call him up. I know I think he still lives in Killeen, or he's still doing stuff in the Texas area, because I've seen some charity stuff that he does. When Tommy Harris signed with Oklahoma, Tommy Harris and I had a really good relationship. So much so that Tommy Harris went to a spring practice at Oklahoma a couple of months after he'd signed, and he got cursed out by the position coach because Tommy Harris was too – I can just say Tommy. I don't say his full name the whole time. Tommy was too close to, I don't know, position drills or something like that. So the position coach yelled at him, get the fuck out of here or something. Something involving the F word, and it was directed at Tommy. And Tommy's feelings and that recruitment was one that Texas and Oklahoma until the very bitter end, there were – all kinds of accusations about how he ended up at Oklahoma. And once upon a time, he'd showed up at a recruiting event in a James Brown jersey, if I'm not mistaken, or some Ricky Williams, maybe, I don't know. But like, he was a big Texas fan. He ends up at Oklahoma. He goes to this practice. He gets cursed out. And Tommy Harris wanted to transfer to Texas. He was like, I made a mistake. I don't want to be here. I don't want to play for a guy who just cursed me out. And he called me up, man. It was like, I'm transferring. And I was like, dude, I don't think you can. I was like, if you transferred to Texas, that was back in the days where the rule was you had to sit out 2 years if you were transferring within the Big 12. And I was like, I just don't think you can do that, Tommy. And he called the Texas coaches.
And the coaches were like, Tommy, we can't talk to you, man. You got to figure this out on your own. It never really got reported on, but Tommy like was using me for some sort of counsel at the time. And I was like, Tommy, man, I think you just got to suck it up, man, and go play at Oklahoma. Like, I was like, your reputation will be smeared if you transfer because a coach used the F word at you. And then it's funny because then Tommy went, stayed at Oklahoma, was a freshman All-American, had a tremendous career, never looked back. I wonder how much of that he remembers today. Because, like, I've encountered Drew Brees in the last couple of years, and there are things about his recruitment that I remember better than he does. I wonder – I've got to get Tommy Harris on a podcast on War and pick his brain and see if I can get him to give me the full story on how he almost transferred to Texas after, you know, not even enrolling at Oklahoma for a day.
You should. You know what, Ketch? Because that's a good idea. You know, sometimes people ask you, like, once every couple of months, they'd be like, well, I want to want those wherever happened to or where are they nows? And, you know, it doesn't work well in print, but it might work good for a podcast.
It could.
It might work a little bit better for a podcast, you know, situation than a kind of a print situation. Something to think about.
Jason, as we transition, if this Brew McCoy thing hadn't popped up, I feel like a lot of the podcast would be centering on the rest of 2020 recruiting, or excuse me, 2019 recruiting, as we get closer to the second signing date. But we would also be talking about the weekend that Texas just had. We would be talking about Demas and the A&M thing. And I guess we can kind of get into that now. This was going to be the lead until yesterday. Let's talk about your impressions. It's funny, I was doing your Something's Brewing, producing it yesterday, and I tweaked the headline a little bit, but, you know, the point getting across, no matter which version of the headline we went with, was Texas just had a great weekend in recruiting, especially as it relates to 2020.
Yeah, in fact, I was talking to someone about this, just kind of a source, if you will, and giving them my opinion. I said, hey, I legitimately think every player that they brought in, aside from Demond Demas, and I'll talk about him in a second, but I think Texas elevated its chances with every single player that came in. I talked to every single one except Zach Evans, who doesn't really do interviews unless you get him in person, but I did talk to his brother, and same thing there. I feel the same way with Zachary Evans as I do all the other guys. You know, Jace McClellan, the running back, had some really big, figuratively and literally, big offensive linemen come in, Chad Lindbergh, Jalen Garth, Damian George, excuse me, Zachary Evans' teammates, a couple top defensive line targets. You had DBs, guys that the Texas staff is extremely high on, safety Bryson Washington, Jalen Jones, a corner out of Cibolo Steel. I came out of this weekend and you all know it, and most people who follow or pay attention to me, I'm usually a fairly conservative reporter. I think Texas put themselves, and it's early, I get it, man, I think Texas is co-leaders or leaders for the majority of those guys that were on campus. I mean, I think that those guys, if you go back and look at that list, and I'll just blow through it real quick, Ty Jordan, running back, Zachary Evans, running back, Jace McClellan, running back. They're not going to get all three of those guys, of course. Demond Demas, Kelvonte Dixon out of Carthage, who's Keontae Egram's younger brother. He's a receiver. Offensive lineman Logan Parr, already committed to Texas. Chad Lindbergh, Jake Majors, Jalen Garth, Damian George. Defensive line Vernon Broughton, Prince Dorba, Princely Umanenmielen, if I'm saying that right, was in town for the game. Linebacker, they offered Brennan Scott. DBs, I mentioned Jalen Jones and Bryson Washington. Of those guys, I think probably 80% of them, if I was forced to pick right now, I think Texas gets 80%. I think that's going to be those names have a chance to be a big part of this 2020 recruiting class. That's how high they are on Texas. I think that's how good a good job the Texas staff did last weekend. I can't state it enough. I think it was a brilliant move to get those guys in early, A, for the basketball game, get them on campus, get those offensive linemen on campus together. Those guys want to play together. You've got junior days coming up. I mapped out my schedule. I mean, the month of February and March, you've got Rivals has its camps in Houston and Dallas. Under Armour has its camps in Houston and Dallas. Dallas has its camps in Houston and Dallas. Obviously, coaches will be busy with spring football. It's hard. It's harder and harder, man. You got other schools having recruiting junior days. It's hard to get all those guys on campus together. So I think it was smart by Texas to do that on a weekend when a lot of schools are still trying to put, you know, focused on the 2019 class and the finishing touches there. Texas really, I feel like they hit it out of the park, laying some foundation with top 2020 prospects. So productive, ultra productive day overall. You know, the Demas thing, unfortunately, is the story that everybody talked about. And I was the one that kind of stole the spotlight just because it's drama and whatever. And it's human nature. It's a train wreck. But, you know, what happened there is, I mean, he did leave campus with a sour taste in his mouth. He didn't like some of the jokes and the jabs about A&M and the SEC. And some of that was Sam Ellinger, you know, saying, hey, man, we just beat one school and you know, surprise, surprise, right? We'll beat that school, the other one. And, but I'm like, listen, dude, you're committed to A&M. You're going to a recruiting event at Texas. What the hell do you expect? You know, I mean,
and you're just going to rein in Sam. Like, Sam.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you got to, you know, get over it a little bit. I'm sorry, man. I know he's a young kid. He's still a junior in high school, but you can't let that stuff get to you too much. Well, he didn't like it necessarily. He had a terrible visit, but he didn't like that aspect of the visit. He thought it was too much and he was being singled out or whatever. You know, word trickles out on that Sunday. And then you got one jackass Texas A&M reporter who blasts it all over Twitter and exaggerates it and oversells it and overhypes it and says Tom Herman spent his whole speech, you know, dogging on A&M, which is complete bullshit. It's just it's par for the course with that dude. Bottom line is I talked to, you know, his trainer, Rashad Whitfield, Footwork King. And, you know, he did say on Sunday, yeah, you know, DeMond wasn't happy. He's not good. You know, I don't know if he'll be going back to Texas. We'll see. He's not feeling it right now. I talked to him again a couple days ago. He said, yeah, as expected, you know, that stuff's blown over. There's a long way to go for DeMond Demas. We'll see what happens with him in Texas. And frankly, per people I've had conversations with, and I'll put a lot of this in the war room tonight, but Texas, the people I've talked to this week, they're not sweating it, man. Texas isn't sweating it. That doesn't mean they don't value DeMond Demas. He's a fantastic prospect, you know, five-star type talent, but Texas doesn't feel like it did one ounce of anything wrong. And based on all the recruits I've talked to and everybody else I've talked to, I agree with them. I think DeMond maybe took stuff a little too personally. And bottom line is I think it's pretty well smoothed over at this point. So that was a big recruiting weekend. Looking forward, not a lot of action expected this weekend. You will have a couple guys on campus this weekend, guys who couldn't make it last weekend. But then the following weekend, the weekend right before signing day, February 1 through February 3rd, you've got Lakia Henry, the JUCO linebacker, will be taking his official visit, as will Texas commitment, if you want to call him that. Javon Shepherd will be taking his official visit that weekend. So we still have some 2019 stuff to cover, including you know, a couple JUCO guys, graduate transfers, things of that nature. So kind of double dip in 2020, 2019, but it gives us a lot to talk about.
I remember when I first got credentialed, this is 2001, and we were doing this lunch thing. I think it was like at the beginning of the season, might've been in August. And we were all doing this roundtable discussion with Mack Brown and Garnett Smith, the linebacker from Arlington Lamar, who eventually signed with Texas, was committed to Texas. And in the 5 minutes that I had been at the table and right before Mack had showed up and sat down, Garnett Smith flipped his commitment to Oklahoma. And I'll never forget. So Mack walks in the room and like, I didn't know Mack real well. So I thought I'm going to tell Mack some information that he doesn't know and he's going to be thankful for it. Right. Like I thought this would help me. So I was like, hey Mack, did you hear the thing about Garnett Smith? And so it just came out. And he was like, no, what happened with Garnett Smith? And I go, well, he just committed. He just flipped his commitment from Texas to Oklahoma. And the Mack was so much more like low key back then. He became such a stressed out dude in his later years. He literally shrugged his shoulders and goes, he'll probably commit to us in a week, commit to them in a month. We'll see what happens in January. He'll probably sign with us. But if he doesn't, oh, well. And I was like, wow,
that's a really healthy approach, Coach. That's, I wouldn't have expected you to handle that with such ease and restraint. I don't know that Mac did that very often after that, but once upon a time, Garnett Smith, these coaches are usually fully aware of the flakiness of these kids.
There's one thing, Ketch, I'll jump, that I've learned, like I said, in whatever, close to two decades of doing this, college coaches, listen, they don't like losing recruiting battles, but they don't get nearly as worked up about it as the fan base does. I mean, it's usually like,
It's usually about they just don't want the reaction, right? Like, they don't want there to be a meltdown. It's not that they care. They just care that there's not a meltdown, because then they have to, like, answer for it. At least that would be the case under Mac. And even Charlie was a little bit like that. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes I've just never got the sense that Tom Herman cares about that. I think it Anwar allows his coaching staff to just do their business with more ease than I think previous assistant coaches. I've told this story before, but to you, but when Bobby Kennedy was on the national championship team in 2005, they just won the championship in 2005. So January of 2006. And I remember I was having a phone call with Bobby, and he was like, "Hey, do you think Mac's going to keep me?" And I was like, "You guys just won the national championship." And he was like, "Yeah, I don't know, man. You think he's going to keep me?" And I was like, "Dude, you're one of their best recruiters, and you guys just won a national championship. Like, I think he's going to keep you. And, you know, he was just always worried about, shout out Coach Kennedy. You can lift the ban off the discussion after a decade.
Coach Kennedy stole Elijah Higgins from Texas. He's out of Stanford now.
Yes, that's right.
Still doing real good recruiting.
Still doing his thing. But I don't get the sense on where that these assistant coaches walk around on pins and needles. And it's probably one of the, you know, I think some people want to criticize Herman for not being harsher on his assistants, right? And like this idea that, well, he just won't fire Tim Beck. He needed to fire him. It was the worst decision that he ever made. And Tom Herman doesn't really care what those people think. And then so consequently, I do think it permeates down to his assistant coaches, who can work with a little bit less stress hanging over their heads at all times than maybe we've seen around these parts in a while.
I'm going to have to disagree with that, Kutch.
Okay.
He's loyal. Now, here's the thing. Now, is he loyal to his guys? Absolutely. You know, he would never throw Tim Beck under the bus. And he's very loyal to Tim Beck. He's loyal to a staff that he's pretty much had since day one, right? I think the persona.
But I've never heard him, like, I've never heard that, like, Herman browbeat his coaches too bad, or like read them the riot act. Like, you know, am I wrong? Like, have there been situations in your mind where
it's essentially the dinner table kind of mannerisms, where at the dinner table, maybe your wife says something that you don't like, and you don't say something out in public where you guys he's serious about his stuff behind closed doors, and behind closed doors, he gets on everyone's ass. I mean, he's very conscious and very competitive. And I think I wouldn't let the on camera persona fool you. But behind closed doors, he wants to know the answers. He wants to know what guys are doing, and he is pushing guys for them to be the best. And he wants them to put a wall around Texas and be able to keep the elite guys in. And he definitely challenges them to do that type of stuff. He's not a guy who's just going to be like, "Hey, we lost them. Okay, that's cool. There's no problem." He's going to be a guy, "We lost them. What the hell happened?" And that's the kind of guy he is. So yeah, he's very aggressive. He's a guy who was going after Gundy. I mean, during a game, like
I guess the point I'm trying to make is it's about the little things, though. Like, my experience with other head coaches before Tom Herman, especially Mac Brown, right? And you got to be careful not to draw too many conclusions off of one. You know, at that point in my career, other than covering Makovic a little bit, you know, Mac Brown was my only long-term relationship, and being in the media and covering a head coach from 98 all the way through what 16, 17 years, like Mac was the guy. I always sense that Mac day in and day, like Mac would hold his staff meetings. And the first thing he would say is, what's being talked about over on orangebloods.com. And, you know, we've told the story before about Mac seeing on Orange Bloods that I had titled Steve Edmonds' highlight tape is Steve Edmonds has a wallet that says bad MF on it. And Mac took that literally and, like, you know, felt like the high school needed to be called. And, you know, I just feel like there's a level, a layer of like tediness and like extra, like the stuff that truly doesn't matter, like that you just got to shrug off sometimes. I think that Herm is just better about that, that, you know, that day in and day out, it may not be quite as petty and like silly as some of the stuff that we've seen around here. And I think the petty and the silly puts those guys on walking eggshells nonstop. But I mean, maybe like you're saying, there's a different way of pushing those buttons to get them to feel like they're walking on eggshells. And it's just a different level, a different application of doing so.
Yeah. I don't think he's petty, right? I wouldn't say he's a petty guy. I think he, you know, let some things bounce off of him as far as a public thing, but I would definitely say he's detail oriented. And I don't think he misses a beat. I mean, it's a guy who has a P chart and wants to know what color. I mean, he was testing urine.
Do they still do that?
He's laxed on that. He's got to let that go. Guys know what they're supposed to do, but he's definitely not testing them as hard and strenuous. He's adjusted now. He came in and year one and definitely was, you know, aggressive, but of course that had to be done. I think you can now see in year two, the foundation that was laid in year one, and no matter how much people complained and bitched about it, probably had to be done. But he definitely has attention to details, and I definitely think he does adjust and becomes player friendly and things to that effect. But when it comes to the meetings and all that type of stuff, he's very in tune. He's from what everything I've been told, very very in tune and very detail oriented. As far as like every aspect of it, I don't think you can go up to him and mention something about his program and he not know about it.
Hey, Dustin, in that same vein, Shaka Smart, how do you think his assistant coaches feel right now? What do you think the vibe is? I mean, look, you know, the thing that I wrote about, I'm sure you did as well after the game, is that you beat Oklahoma. It's a great moment. It's much needed, but it only lasts until the next moment unless they start to string together some wins in a row to give themselves some breathing room. So it feels like we're at the point in the basketball season where the lows are still happening too frequently. The season really does seem to live week to week. Like suddenly the Georgia game, I think, you know, they need to win that game anyway, but you know, you just can't. You can't win one, lose two, win one, lose one, win one, lose two. Like that's no way to go through a season in hopes of having something at the end. Your vibe on probably what's being felt around the scenes after last night.
Just kind of the question of when are they going to break through? I mean, it's. I feel like they have played in a bunch of close games. I think they're now 4-7 in games decided by 6 points or less. And it's just, if it's not one thing one night, it's another thing. You know, last night it was turnovers and offensive rebounding. There's been other times earlier that it's been defense. And then there's been times when it's been offense. And there's been times when it's been perimeter shooting. It's been times when the seniors didn't show up. And last night the sophomore point guard didn't really show up. So they got to be thinking, you know, how in the heck can we get this team to just be consistent? Because the urgency level, it's past the point where you've got to find your urgency level when you're this deep into the season and you've already played 7 conference games. You got a road game in the Big 12 SEC Challenge coming up. And then February is right around the corner. And February is a month where if you're a team like Texas, you're fighting for wins as it relates to getting into the NCAA tournament. So that when March comes along, You're not extremely nervous about what's going to happen on Selection Sunday. So it's just kind of been the same story all year. It's been, you know, a lot of close games, a lot of games that go to the opposition, but not Texas. And then just this feeling of being close all the time, but not being able to break through. And when is that going to happen? When are, you know, all of these guys going to play at the level they need to on a consistent basis? When is there going to be a complete performance for full 40 minutes? When is there going to be a game where you aren't asking questions about one side of the basketball in Big 12 play? I mean, it's just been the same thing over and over and over again. And I think that, you know, they'll probably wonder, and I was, you know, on the teleconference, asked Shagar Smart, hey, are these guys dealing with mental fatigue, physical fatigue? I mean, is this grind getting to them? And, you know, he said, like, all college basketball teams, it gets to people this time of the year. But, you know, he does think that those guys think they're close. But at some point, close has got to become consistently playing at a high level to win enough basketball games. And right now, that's just not happening. And you know, here we are 19 games in, and it's when is it going to happen? Is it going to happen this year? And the data we have to work on so far suggests it's just not going to.
Yeah, I was going to say I've given up. I have. I think this team will have occasional moments like the one it had against Oklahoma. I'm resigned that this season is going to end. You know, how many total games did they play this year, Dustin, before – how many games do they play?
Before the Big 12 tournament, they'll play 31 total games. So
they'll, let's say they win one, they'll probably be in that opening game sequence. So they play that first night, then they get to the quarterfinals, add two games. It feels like they're going to be like an 18-15 team, maybe at best. It just feels like that's where we're headed.
Yeah, if you look at the KenPom projections before the Big 12 conference tournament, they're at 17-14. But more importantly for them, they're at 9-9 in the league. So the league record is gonna matter a lot. We're gonna get to Selection Sunday, and there's gonna be a lot of leagues that are just awful. There's gonna be a lot of one bid leagues that traditionally would put more than one team in the NCAA tournament. I mean, the Pac-12 this year is wretched. That's got a chance to be a one bid league, and that's it.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's so bad. It is so bad. You know, UCLA fired its coach, and at one point it looked like, you know, it was climbing up the top of the Pac-12 standings just because the league is just a disaster right now. So there are going to be a lot of Big 12 teams that get into the NCAA tournament with overall records that you're kind of looking at like, what? You know, this team's three games above 500 and they're in the NCAA tournament. But there's just not many good basketball leagues this year and not many good basketball teams. So, but yeah, I think 18-15 is very fair. I mean, that basically is you win one game in the conference tournament, then you lose the next one. But really what's most importantly for them is if they can – they got to find a way to get to 500 in the league. I went back and looked. I think it extends back – I want to say it was like 2012 or something like that. But if you get to 500 in the Big 12, you get in the NCAA tournament, regardless of what your overall record is. So that's going to be the mark they shoot for. But, yeah, it's – you know, you mentioned the Georgia game. You go there on the road. I mean, winning anywhere on the road is difficult against a team with a pulse and some talent. But they got to win that one because then they turn around on Tuesday. They host Kansas at home. Then they go to Iowa State. I mean, you don't win that Georgia game, there's a real chance you could be sitting at 11-11 after the Iowa State game. And then you're thinking, oh, man, you know, how do we find enough wins to just get above 500 overall and then maybe have a chance to play our way into the NCAA tournament? So, yeah, they've got to bounce back this weekend and find a way to get a W just to feel good about themselves again. But it's one step forward, one step back, or one step forward, two steps forward, and then three steps back. I mean, that's just the way it's been with this basketball team. It's the way it's been with this program for the 4 years under Shagar Smart.
Anwar, have you given up? Like, has the lack of shooters? You're at the point now.
Anwar Smart, he's looking at Greg Brown highlights instead of watching the basketball team.
Greg Brown is amazing.
He's smart, man. He's looking at the fun stuff.
I text some of my boys that video that Dustin posted the other day, and I was like, man, we got to go to a Vandergrift games. And they watched it, and they're like, we're in. We're all in. So, yeah, man, like, I'm going to watch some good basketball this year, and it's going to be in high school. Vandergrift, I'm going.
And speaking of him, he's going to play on an AAU team this summer that's going to have, I believe, Cade Cunningham, him, and R.J. Hampton, who some people think R.J. Hampton is the best player in the 2020 class. They're all kids that are originally from Texas. Cade Cunningham plays right now at, I think, IMG or Mount Verde, one of those schools in Florida. So all those guys are going to be on the same AAU team, all five-star prospects, all, like, top 15 overall type prospects. So I can't wait to watch those guys, and we'll see if Texas has a shot at all three of them. I know they have a shot with Greg Brown.
What, just remind me, his relation to the former Texas player, Greg Brown?
That's his son.
That is his son.
Yeah, that's Greg Brown that played under Mack Brown.
Yes.
Yeah, that's his son.
I thought so, but I wanted to confirm that before I told the story. I mean, Greg Brown ended up at Texas because he was thought to be the throw-in while Texas was recruiting Travis Miner, who Dustin will know because he went to Florida State and had a solid college career, although he was never the superstar that he was the number one running back in the country back in 1997. And yeah, 1997. And he's from Baton Rouge, right? Wait, isn't that where he's from, Dustin?
Yeah, Greg. Yeah, he's from Baton Rouge.
So the thought was that they would recruit all of Travis Miner's teammates, one of which happened to be Major Applewhite. So Major Applewhite, who originally committed to A&M but flipped to Texas, he commits to Texas. Greg Brown was not a guy that was thought to be a big-time recruit. He commits to Texas. So Texas had two of the three kids from that high school, and the hope was that by having those two, it would help them get the third, and in the end, it didn't. Travis Miner went to Florida State. But what's really interesting about that is obviously Major Applewhite, who was viewed as a throw-in, turned out to be Major Applewhite. And Greg Brown, who was thought to be a guy that when Texas took Greg Brown in 97, the thought was that he was just scholarship space, that they literally took him to get the other guy, and that he was just going to be a guy that took up roster space. And Greg Brown turned out to be a pretty damn good player, a college player when it was all said and done. And it would just be incredibly fascinating if the sports gods reward Texas, because, you know, at this point, from what I've read on this, it's not a slam dunk, right? I mean, he's not.
Nobody. Well, no, I mean, he's the number six overall player in the country. So, I mean, you talk about guys like that.
Options.
They're going to have a lot of options. I do think that Texas is probably positioned best right now. But, you know, he hasn't cut a list yet or anything like that. So, but yeah, it's not a slam dunk lock type situation.
It's just funny to me how the gifts sometimes can keep giving, potentially, like Greg Brown, in theory, could be a Longhorn when it's all said and done. And that probably only happens because his dad went to Texas, and his dad only went to Texas if you listen to some people who follow recruiting back in the day, because Texas just wanted him to get to Travis Miner. And all these years later, the Travis Miner gift potentially keeps giving, even though Travis Miner never ended up a Texas Longhorn. Sorry, that was a 21-year-old story that I 22 years that I had to get out of my system. What else do we have, guys? Do we get into parting shots now? Is there anything else that this week, do we need to talk about Tristan Houston and Kyle Porter and the portal? I mean, anything else really warrant substantial discussion?
Parting shots it is.
Well, then, Jason, you go first. You called it.
Okay, I'll jump in. One thing we didn't address, because I specifically wanted to save it for my parting shots, I hope everybody's still listening, is Jake Majors, the offensive lineman out of Prosper, will announce his decision tonight at 7:30. So certainly we'll have this podcast out before then. So he's down to, I think, officially 12 or 13 schools is what he listed on his tweet when he announced on Monday that he was going to commit. But listen. This is a guy who came up for the recruiting event on Saturday. He's been very high on Texas previously. He comes up on Saturday And he announced on Monday that, hey, I'm ready to make my decision, and announce my decision Thursday night at 7:30. So Texas has one offensive line commit in Logan Parr. I would say really good chance Texas will add a second offensive line commit tonight in Jake Majors. And as soon as he announces at 7:30, I plan to have a story ready and written and ready to go. So everybody stay tuned. We'll have coverage of that as soon as it happens. And, you know, sometimes often – well, Texas fans are pretty good, man. The fans on our board appreciate offensive line recruits probably more than I think a lot of fan bases do. I get it. They're not quarterbacks or running backs, but go take a look at Jake Majors' film. I put on a couple threads in the board, or just go to Huddle and search for Jake Majors. His offensive line film is pretty damn fun to watch. Rivals has him as a 3-star prospect. Crazy early. Everybody don't freak out. You know, we'll try to leverage some people and say, hey, put his film in front of the people that do those rankings, because this guy is clearly easily a 4-star recruit. And, you know, I think he's a top national recruit. He's got the offers to show it. But look for good news for Texas tonight, 7:30. Jake Majors makes his announcement. So if all things go the way I think it is, everybody should have a good Thursday night in covering or following recruiting.
Mr. McComas, I feel like I've opened the door for you with a little bit of basketball talk. You can go in any direction you want to.
Yeah, I'm going to go to basketball, but I'm going to go to the basketball that brings happiness to my life, and that's James Harden.
I knew you were going to do a James Harden rant.
I'm actually going to – I was like – I looked at the schedule, and this is one of the few weekends from here on out where Texas doesn't have some sporting event at home to cover. So I was like, man, come on, give me a Rockets game to go to. And sure enough, they're playing the Raptors at home on Friday. So I'm going to see James Harden experience in person on Friday against the Toronto Raptors. And it's just been amazing to watch what he's done. I mean, putting, you know, guys like Austin Rivers, Gary Clark, they just signed Kenneth Faried from the Nets, who got bought out, and, you know, these, you know, Gerald Green, and like all these guys that are kind of just spare parts. And here's Harden just going nuts game after game after game. I mean, 61 points last night with 15 rebounds on the road in Madison Square Garden. I mean, he put on a show. So I am very, very excited to go see the James Harden experience in person on Friday. He, as it relates to the bouncing ball in the hardwood, he is what brings me happiness right now. It's going to be fun to go see him in person.
What do you think about that Sixers-Rockets game?
I think the Rockets got their ass kicked. Corey Brewer was pissing me off. Like, Corey Brewer was driving me nuts, and that was a guy that I liked when he was in Houston. But yeah, it was just one of those games where the Rockets roster was just totally overmatched, and there was nothing James Harden was going to do that was going to beat that Philly team. That Philly team was fired up and wanted to make it a point that Harden wasn't going to go in there and get that Rockets team to win against them at home. They knew they were the better basketball team.
Well, and they'd blown the game against the Thunder Saturday.
Yeah, so they were not in a good mood.
We're not going to have a losing streak at home kind of a thing. I love the fact – my favorite thing in the NBA right now is the Joel Embiid-Russell Westbrook feud. And it's horrible that they only play each other twice a year, because every time they get together, like, it's theater. I love – my favorite part of the game obviously was the win, but Embiid giving Harden the stare down after the block, it felt like he was kind of picking a fight with Harden. Joel Embiid has no chill.
He doesn't. He's one of the, like, Texas recruited him, I think pretty significantly when he was coming out. And he's one of the only, like, that level of recruit to call me back and, like, remember my name among basketball guys, like, all time. And it's just like, he was such a nice, like, soft-spoken, great young man as a recruit. And then it's just funny, because now I see him now, and I was like, this dude is a killer. Like, he wants to go out there and pick fights with everybody. He wants to dunk on everybody. He wants to foul everybody hard. He wants to talk shit. Like, this is the same dude that, you know, I guess it was probably like 7 or 8 years ago would call me back and, oh, I'm sorry I missed your call. Yeah, I'll answer your questions for you. And he's like, wow, that's really nice of you. Like, even though you're going to be potentially a lottery pick in a little bit. So, but yeah, that feud is great. There's a lot of feuds kind of going on in the NBA. It's really starting to suck me back in. Like, I found myself watching the Nuggets Jazz game last night because there's about to be fights breaking out at every turn. And then Eric Bossy of Rivals.com like tweeted out, you know, when Mason Plumlee and I think it was Derek Favors got into a fight.
Yes.
Like, there was a recruiting event like years and years and years ago when both those guys were recruits, where I believe Derek Favors had a cheap shot on one of Plumlee's teammates. And like, apparently they've had a grudge for a long, long time. And I was like, holy crap. Like, these guys even hold grudges back from AAU basketball. So I love that aspect of the NBA because unlike any other sport, you get these one-on-one, like personal battles all the time. Like, I know you get it some with football, with the linemen and the receiver DBs and stuff like that. But basketball, man, you can't escape the other guy on the floor. Like, there's just that sort of mental and physical battle going on at all times. So I'm thoroughly appreciating all these grudges being held in these feuds that are going on in the NBA right now.
Mr. Richardson.
So, you know, I was thinking about, you know, we talked so much about Brew McCoy and kind of the crux of this whole thing really becomes like Cliff Kingsbury kind of lied to the guy. I mean, I think that's kind of fair to say that, hey, I'm going to be here. I'm going to be your coach, so on and so forth. And then as Jason talks about what happened, right? So it made me think of this story that I heard from a coach that I covered back in the day. Dustin can attest to this. Like, I covered a Division II program, Florida Southern College. And you want to talk about what's real? You want to talk about relaxed, cover like a Division II program, right? Because they're just so happy that anyone's there to talk to them that you can pretty much just sit in their office for hours, have lunch. Like, it's great, right? So he tells me this story about one of these other schools. Like, and this is like pre-internet catch, right? And one of these other schools flew a kid down and showed him their campus. But the campus that they showed him was actually the University of South Florida campus, and not the actual campus that he would be playing on. And so the guy goes and sees this big gym, and he's like, wow, I'm going to be playing here. Like, yep, this is going to be your home. And they show him around the campus. And I don't know how this guy missed all the signs that may have said USF Bulls or anything like that. And so apparently the guy signed the scholarship, right? He then flies back down when it's time to come. They pick him up in a van. And they drive them, and they in the University of South Florida is actually not too far off the interstate, but you can see the signs, and he kind of knew, and it just kept driving him for like another 2 hours until he actually got to the campus that he actually was going to be on. He could use a transfer. He could have used a transfer portal back then. Is all,
yeah. Oh man, that.
Well, you know, this Anwar. Texas Tech historically brings their recruits in at night because they don't want them to be startled by Lubbock. So they bring them out after the sun goes down, and then they try to break in Lubbock to them easily.
So they don't have them fly over the cotton fields as they go into Lubbock. They can't see it. They go to see it in the morning time and be kind of startled.
Exactly. Like, at that point, they've already been there. They've kind of seen it at night. But yes, historically, Texas Tech is known for bringing in their recruits after hours. Just so, you know, and I get it.
They're like, what's that smell? What is that smell in the air in Lubbock? What is this? Yeah, it made me just think of how people lie in the seat, and that's kind of my go-to story. I don't even know the guy's name. It's not even important for the story. I just know there was a guy who totally viewed a campus, saw a big gym, and then when he showed up, got taken to his real school.
That's a fantastic story. My only parting shot today is I just wanted to thank everybody on the Orange Bloods message boards. It feels like there's always a spike in traffic, Jason, you know, in January, it's December and January are peak traffic months, but it feels like the message board activity. I mean, your stories have been just banging with traffic all week long. Like, every time you post something, it's like 15,000, 18,000, 20,000. So like, the message board is jumping with activity, and I feel like, relatively speaking, God, I'm going to say this, it's been
fairly okay. Like, you know, like,
I just did ban once somebody during Anwar's parting shot, by the way.
Who?
Nice.
Who?
What is that called? But I'm not going to say, but he's calling another poster a sniveling pussy, which I know is kind of an inside joke, but you just can't go around doing it. I'll let him back on later today, but I mean,
come on. You just had to give him the don't do that speech.
Back up DMs.
But for the most part, the message boards. It's been fairly tame, you know? Like, I feel like there's a lot of stuff going on. I always wake up in the middle of the night every night and I check the message boards to make sure that, like, there's not a fire. And I feel like for the last couple of weeks, you know, the site has been, man, winning something great, isn't it? Texas wins the Sugar Bowl, and 3 weeks later, it's like, man, there's a lot of people on the website, and they're not all angry at the same time. So I just wanted to say thank you to all of the crazies for being a little bit less crazy, because you don't have to be as crazy if your football team's better than it has been for the last decade or so. It's funny how moods can change around here. Let's keep it up! I want this offseason to be fun! Don't you guys ruin it by being, you know, you. be this new you. Don't be the old you. Be the new you, where for the most part, there's a bunch of inside jokes and things like that. But nobody is, like, trying to beat each other with hammers, except for the guy who just called somebody a pussy on the message board. What was it? A sniveling? Was he sniveling?
Sniveling pussy, yeah.
Sniveling.
It was just an inside joke from a couple weeks ago. I get it, but not everybody on the board's in tune with these inside jokes. So calling someone a sniveling pussy is not the best way to go about
it. You just did this because you don't agree with his politics. That's what
you are, right.
And on that note, hey, thanks for listening to the podcast. It wasn't exactly the marathon sessions that we've done in the past. Like, I feel like we had a lot. I'm not going to say it because then Anwar would shout out. That's what she said. But there was a lot that was involved in this podcast. Not going to say it. And yeah, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Later.